Update on development of the groundwater protection strategy.
Let's see if I can get this more in the Goldilocks zone. How's that? A little good? Better?
Yeah, if you want to give lessons to that effect, it'd be well.
Good morning, Chairman Corbett, members of the board. I'm Jeremiah Puget, senior environmental scientist of your staff and the groundwater specialist here at the North Coast region. Today I'll be giving you an update on the development of our groundwater protection strategy, and we'll be covering a number of topics on that point. So what I've created here for you to look at today is a bit of a visual outline of the presentation. The image is not necessarily a process, but it helps depict the complexities as well as a number of the different elements I plan on presenting today. So if you take a look at the items at the top at 12 o'clock there in blue, we see basin plan amendments, water quality standards, and just moving around the clock. Before we do, I'll point out that the items in blue are predominantly actions by the board. Our items in the gold or orange are items predominantly actions predominantly by staff. And in green, we have actions by others or kind of the partnering that we'll be talking about a little bit more for because there's quite a bit happening out there with groundwater lately. So that being said, we have basin plan amendments and water quality standards. We'll talk about data compilation and groundwater assessment at a basin scale, risk assessment to beneficial uses, and then basin prioritization, where we put our actions at. Back to actions by the board, the basin plan amendment for an action plan for discharges of waste to land. We'll talk about our program management, a little bit on SGMA, and we'll close with some data-driven adaptive management, a concept here that we're rolling out as part of our strategic teams. And I'll give you some case studies of what we mean by that as I move on to the presentation. As I talk today, maybe keep these points in mind, that there's an abundance of high-quality water, as we all know, here in the North Coast region. And there's a number of statewide policies that have the potential to have effect on groundwater resources. Therefore, the North Coast is developing this strategy to both to protect and maintain such quality, but also for consumptive uses and environmental uses. We're trying to also highlight some of these groundwater-surface water interactions. The goal, of course, is to maintain those uses for municipal and domestic and agricultural water supplies as well. The North Coast Basin Plan point source prohibition to surface waters has really led to a lot of discharges to land and hence groundwater. And you know, it's much easier to prevent pollution to the shallow groundwater zone than it is to remediate a deeper zone or a municipal zone. Our priorities and actions, as I mentioned, will be informed by data collection and analysis. And finally, SGMA does offer and promotes, really, groundwater management and protection at a local level, as you know. And there will be a role for us in that throughout the various basins.
Jeremiah, thanks. Expand on number four a little bit for me. What have we done? What was the action that has led to this reaction?
That's a great question, Board Member Giusti. Our basin plan is unique among the state in that we have a point source prohibition to discharge to surface waters, and there's only the exemption in the Eel, the Mad, and the Russian during the summertime. And so what the result is with all waste treatments for both publicly owned treatment facilities and smaller dischargers as well is that with inability to discharge to surface waters, there's only one other way to go, and that's to land or other types of reuse. Sure. So let's start with a brief overview of where we are to date with respect to our water quality standards, the federal term for our beneficial uses and water quality objectives, and the anti-degradation policy. The development of this protection strategy is identified as phase two of that basin plan amendment package. This is on the triennial review, one of the high priority projects. I believe it's number five. And as some recall in 2015, this board approved revisions to our water quality objectives predominantly the chemical constituents, in addition to the new groundwater toxicity objective, the narrative. She also provided clarifying language on how we implement our narrative objectives, and it's been a helpful piece thus far. That has been approved by the State Water Board and now the Office of Administrative Law, and we are nearing the closing period for which the US EPA is reviewing the revisions to our standards. A little fine nuance in there is that our groundwater standards, they're not approved by US EPA, so they technically are effective and enforceable, but we haven't rolled out the new basin plan on the public website yet because of the little nuance with EPA approval of surface water standards. So you could probably be looking for that by the end of the year, we're hopeful. I should be hearing back from EPA anytime. So when it comes to beneficial use designation of new uses for groundwater, there's a number of physical interactions that our basin plan could improve on, and there's a little bit of clarity that we could get to. Our basin plan recognizes recharge from streams, but there are vague inconsistencies, and we could do a little bit better when it comes to recognizing the beneficial use of groundwater to freshwater replenishment. So what I'm talking about is the use of surface waters going to groundwater is acknowledged, but it's not quite clear that that existing beneficial use of groundwater flowing into our streams is clearly designated. Additionally, there needs to be some recognition, and I'll go into some data later on to illustrate the point about groundwater recharge and shallow aquifers, groundwater actually being a use of groundwater recharge. So there's a function of that as groundwater percolates down through the aquifers. There can be some exceptions in some certain instances, but this would also make us a bit more consistent with other basin plans throughout the state that recognize this, and I believe as we move on in time, something we should continue to bring to the forefront. With respect to surface water replenishment, other regions do make this much clearer. For example, Lahontan region has designated groundwater beneficial uses even for wildlife habitat and rare threatened and endangered species. And you can imagine that both for plants and even fish. So the images you see here on the left, really, they generally depict the conditions of a stream. In the top one, we have gaining streams where the groundwater table is actually discharging and adding flow to the surface water. B, the next one down, we have the losing stream where your stream is actually feeding the aquifer. And in C, we have the losing and disconnected stream where you are feeding groundwater, but there's not that connection, and that can cause some issues, as we'll go into. Any stream really could be any one of these three or a combination of them as we move through the seasons. Currently, there's a number of complex statewide efforts to map groundwater-dependent ecosystems. Here you see a composite score of the state focusing on Northern California. And of course, as you know, in the north, we have some, like the Shasta and the Scott, we have some heavy reliance on that. Entities like the Nature Conservancy have been working on some really interesting statewide mapping, and don't stress too hard on this graphic. The point that I really want to make is what they're doing with this right now as we focus in on Humboldt Bay. You can see where we're overlaying the orange, the surface water data, with the Department of Water Resources groundwater basin data to give folks a little bit better sense, because this is one of those mysteries out there to a lot of folks right now. It has been recognized throughout the region and the state that pumping has the potential to negatively impact freshwater recharge from streams. In fact, the extent of these impacts aren't just limited to the stream flows, but they can also adversely affect the riparian zone by changing morphology and drastically altering the composition of species. And even when streams become disconnected, we could lose the entire riparian zone altogether, which, as you know, has big effects for pollution reduction, stream temperatures, and ecosystem health. Reductions in the groundwater levels can also have an adverse effect on our wetland systems nearby and adjacent zones. And so these are the reasons why we should be considering groundwaters as we have beneficial uses of freshwater replenishment, wildlife habitat, perhaps even rare threatened endangered species, and further recognizing the importance of this two-way street, that hydrology kind of works both ways in the uses, and that should be acknowledged. There's a lot of work happening out there on this. Here, an example of a conceptual model for watershed hydrology that the Russian River Independent Science Review Panel has recently put together. Of course, Board Member Moore was mentioning the watershed model that Dr. Nishikawa and the USGS, in conjunction with the State Board and the Water Agency, have produced for Santa Rosa Plain and expanding that effort to the entire Russian River watershed. Quite an ambitious effort. And we'd be remiss if we didn't acknowledge some of the early science and efforts that we've had in cooperation with folks like UC Davis and Dr. Thomas Harder up in the Scott watershed for implementation of our total maximum daily load for temperature. On the groundwater recharge, we like showing these kinds of conceptual diagrams because not only are we again acknowledging this discharge to streams, but it gets back to this point that I was making about the length of time that we have when it comes to percolation and infiltration of groundwater recharging the deeper zones. So a number of distinctions should be made there. And again, a number of regions make that distinction. It may be a simple and subtle one. Nevertheless, we think the board should consider that in the actions that they take in the future. The next component of the strategy is data compilation and groundwater assessment. As part of our efforts, it's really important to understand the current status of what our basins are, what those conditions look like out there. Do we have cause for concerns regarding human health and taste and odor issues on the grander basin-wide scale, not necessarily the smaller point source or spills or leaks that we've become accustomed to regulating? And, you know, really, too, is this supportive of agriculture? With a lot of the pollutants that we'll be looking at today, salts and nutrients, something we want to ensure that we have agricultural viability throughout the state in the long term as we move on talking about sustainability. So here's an image of our Here's an image of our groundwater database, GeoTracker Gamma, that houses data from a wide range of sources. You can kind of see it over here, like the Department of Pesticide Regulation, Water Resources, and so on. There's a number of them out there. And this is the Groundwater Ambient Monitoring Assessment Program, equivalent to our Surface Water Ambient Program that you'll hear later on. I find the agenda fascinating today, by the way. We're starting with groundwater, moving to streams, and will eventually discharge to the ocean. So it's pretty cool. This particular layer does show us nitrate contamination throughout the region. And just to orient you a little bit, we do have in green, we have non-detects. In yellow, we have detections. And in the red colors, we have actually exceedances of nitrate. And we'll go into another example right here where this is actually from our region in Valley Ford, where we've had a water supply well that has been taken out of commission. They've had to drill new wells and work on new water supplies because of nitrate contamination. I'll go into that a little bit more for one of our case studies later on. So what are we going to do with all the data that we're talking about? Well, we're currently discussing how to best prioritize our strategic efforts by identifying potential impacts and threats to uses. And the image you see may look familiar over here, but what this really is a map of hydrogeologically vulnerable areas. And what that is are areas that are susceptible to infiltration. And if that does look familiar, again, it's because it is our alluvial basins. And so some of our larger supplies are susceptible to discharges to land. So I wanted to frame the context continually. So taking the strategy in the right direction, we'll be looking at trends and trying to establish baseline conditions a little bit for what our understanding of some of these conditions are out there. Moving back to another potential action by the board is the development of this new action plan. I think you're kind of getting the point as I'm reiterating the importance of the receiving water of groundwater. And what we'll be doing in this is addressing best management practices, monitoring programs, and criteria, really, for discharges of waste to land. It's not very clear in our basin plan right now about the types of requirements that we have and the processes in which we think for soil treatment and monitoring that can be required to verify that we're not having degradation. So we'd like to make that much more clear both to future staff and the regulated community. So here we have a conceptual model of the hydrograph or the hydrologic cycle, kind of interjecting a couple of different points about what pressures do we see out on the lands from municipal treatment to perhaps recycled water or other types of stormwater recharge and even irrigated agriculture. And then moving down to look at the subsurface, as most domestic water supply wells are shallow and screened, they're really the first receptor that would be hit from any kind of discharge to land. And then we have our deeper wells. It says monitoring well, but let's just pretend today that it's supply wells. And also agricultural wells, those supply wells have a tendency to be screened both in the shallow and the deep or through both. And so they have that receptor there. And ultimately, what we'd be looking at too, not just to identify these sources of salt and nutrients as I've talked about as a programmatic way of handling this, because we are lacking in this region salt and nutrient management plan development. We have 62 groundwater basins, and we've only had one stakeholder come together, the city of Santa Rosa, and those folks have produced a salt and nutrient management plan. We'll be moving on with a monitoring program. But as far as getting informed, that strategy has not proved to be entirely useful for the North Coast region. So in addition to broadly identifying those types of source categories and acknowledging the efforts that we're doing there, the board may ultimately consider a policy statement on the importance of high-quality water from a regional perspective as we try to strive to prevent pollution from an array of preventative from an array of sources in protecting groundwater. As far as our program management component is concerned, it's necessary, and I'd be remiss if I didn't acknowledge the existing works that happens out there with our waivers and our WDRs and our cleanups, discharges of waste to land programs, including dairies and landfills, and our again, our spill and cleanup program, the implementation of the on-site wastewater treatment system policy. We currently here are reviewing several LAMPs, the local agency management plans that have been submitted by Sonoma County, Mendocino County, and Humboldt County. So we're evaluating those. We've been evaluating the ability for us to make monitoring requirements in general orders while we process recycled water permits, because again, we're in the dark a little bit there as far as basin-wide conditions go with respect to specific discharges like water recycling. It's just that lack of salt nutrient management planning or a comprehensive look at the basin. So we're trying to emulate that ourselves a little bit. In addition, we need to continue to work with the further development of our irrigated lands program. As you know, that's a community that we really need to take our time with and educating as far as the process problems and how the regulations will work and potentially affect them as time moves on. So additional actions can include incentivization of our permits to encourage low-impact development and groundwater recharge, prioritization of our actions towards the protection of human health, and requiring groundwater monitoring in our permits and actions, and of course, enforcement as necessary. Moving on to the partnering component, funding, and SGMA, it's really on the other side of the coin from our traditional regulatory approach, and it's the partnering component. And these actions include internal coordination with the Water Board's divisions as well as external entities. Our internal coordination, of course, includes the Division of Water Quality, the Office of Research, Planning, and Performance, the Division of Drinking Water, and the Division of Financial Assistance, in addition to other local, state, and federal agencies. Our external partners also include U.S. Geological Survey, the Department of Water Resources, and even the California Department of Fish and Wildlife, who Fish and Wildlife is also acting with the Nature Conservancy on kind of verifying and informing how they're mapping these groundwater-dependent ecosystems throughout the state. And I was actually pleased just a few weeks ago at the Groundwater Resource Association Conference to meet the Fish and Wildlife groundwater specialists. So we hit it off there and have a lot to catch up on. With respect to funding, the board has just recently been updated on small and disadvantaged communities, and this is something that we're continually keeping in the forefront. We think it's an important component of improving the perhaps outdated waste treatment systems or systems that could use more technical assistance, as they're probably, as you know, particular Chair Corbett, sometimes managing such facilities on a shoestring budget. And so being aware of where we can go to help in that as far as connecting both with what the technical problems are and what the challenges of contracting and grant and funding out of Sacramento. So with respect to funding, finally, we have much to gain in advancing our knowledge of SGMA with the local efforts out there. We've been integrating or meeting with the Sonoma County Water Agency at Santa Rosa Plain. I've been going up to Ukiah to visit the folks up there who are putting together their GSA. We're on the list now to getting invited up to Humboldt and continually work our way up through the various high-priority basins in the state. Touching on the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act a little bit, it's just a reminder that our region includes 8 medium priority basins that are required to form groundwater sustainability agencies or GSAs and have those plans, those groundwater sustainability plans, developed in the next few years. Interesting fact to remind everyone is that these 8 basins account for 60% of the population in the North Coast region and an estimated 80% of the groundwater, as according to Department of Water Resources. There's a few places where we at the board intersect SGMA, including the Office of Research and Planning, as they are preparing to become that backstop in areas where GSAs don't form. So they've been having discussions with us about how things are moving forward. They've been talking with the GSAs or those that are attempting to form in the region. And it's a tough job for them because we don't know how much effort it's going to take until there's some type of failure. But again, the idea and the goal is to get people in the right direction, move them forward, help get them off the ground, and let that be managed at a local level. Chair Corbett?
Mr. Corbett. On the Smith River Plain, are the folks up in Del Norte County, you know, given their limited resources, are you seeing any movement there? Is there any assistance that can be directed their way to help them move this along?
Yeah, that's a great question, Board Member Giusti. As a matter of fact, I could go into the fact that we could soon have 7 medium priority basins. I spoke with Department of Water Resources recently, and the way that they were looking at it is they the first crack at the prioritization of these was really similar to how they rank through the CASGEM program, the groundwater elevation mapping program. And of course, when you do an effort that big, you get a lot of scrutiny. They've had to meet legislative timeframes on moving things forward, but are acknowledging that they're going to revisit this prioritization. So as we could actually end up losing the Smith River on that prioritization, because Del Norte County is, of course, too, writing letters to the state water board saying, you know, we're in California, but we're not really in a drought. And so their perspective on that end, we are concerned, of course, about those areas that don't have robust sources of funding, but at the same time should also acknowledge, as it maybe DWR might be, about the condition of that basin. So it remains to be seen as to how they will be re-ranked. We indeed are trying to keep an ear out for what's going on there.
I was just thinking, because, you know, given the history of the plain with past groundwater contamination, I mean, there should be some data available. There's monitoring wells now looking for past residuals of nematicide. So I mean, it seems like there's some data that could be collected. But, you know, as a community, I mean, that is a desperately resource poor community to pull this off. So just wondering. So
yeah,
thank you.
Indeed. Good. All right. So moving on, just to reiterate a little bit about the Sustainability Groundwater Management Act, there's reasons for this local coordination, and I wanted to get into a couple of the specifics. SGMA defines sustainability by avoiding undesirable results. And you see those as surface water depletions, reductions in storage, degraded water quality, and so on. And there's a number of intersecting points, such as our water quality objectives, where they would play a key role as these GSAs are supposed to have plans that then have criteria in them, measurable, quantifiable criteria. So it's can really be taken upon us to help show that type of criteria already exists, how it can be implemented, and the troubles or the benefits that come along with such clear numeric criteria or narrative criteria. And so furthermore, there's also the growing importance of the groundwater elevation mapping and sustainable water use as a buffer against climate change impacts on the hydrologic cycle and the relative water to the relative water-rich system that we have here on the North Coast. Another example of some of our partnering and integration with DWR is, again, kind of back to this initial ranking. They contacted us about, and particularly, too, about the Smith River Plain, asking about some of those historical issues that they've had out there, and also wondering if we had any information on the impacts of groundwater pumping on streams. So one of the prime examples that we shared with them was the fact that, well, we do have emergency regulations in the Russian River watershed addressing this. We've had the frost protection regulations in the Russian River watershed addressing this. So while we could in time maybe see a change for the Smith River Plain, folks, even at the Sonoma County Water Agency, are aware the Department of Water Resources is looking at Alexander Valley and others that made a very low ranking as potentially moving up that chain. But that remains to be seen as we continue to gather information on that subject. So finally, the last component that I want to touch on before I talk more about our case studies is the notion of data-driven adaptive management. Like all adaptive management applications, we intend to broadly assess conditions in our basin, identify trends, and actions, appropriate actions accordingly based on what we're finding to protect our beneficial uses. So therefore, it's really critically important for us to funnel our groundwater data from our programs into our GeoTracker Gamma site. Not all data yet goes there, but we are definitely transitioning as a state to put all of our data into that system. And that'll help us since, again, I'm reiterating that we only have one salt nutrient management plan throughout the region. In addition to those data efforts, we intend to assess the vulnerability, as I showed you that slide before, and potential risk factors as we're moving in our assessments. And as time moves on, we hope to gain leverage from other basin-wide monitoring programs that you see through SGMA, or even CASGEM. There's a lot of groundwater elevation monitoring going on. People are already going out there, so where we can help, either through funding or technical expertise, is adding to some water quality analysis of that as well. It could go a long way in expanding our knowledge of those conditions. So let's take a look at the case studies that I promised were going to come your way. I didn't actually intentionally do this, but when I realized that all of the cases were actually in Sonoma County, here we go. We do have some analysis that we've done throughout the other parts of the region. Particularly, one of the first things that we did through this new model of operation here was, if you recall, the Humboldt Creamery permit coming up when we were looking at existing total dissolved solid data there as a baseline in comparison to the discharges and the monitoring areas that the creamery was going through. And since then, we've been continuing to look at areas throughout the state. Unfortunately, some areas like the Scott Valley do not have a lot of municipal water supply data. Therefore, we're pretty short in any data at all, save from a few spot measurements in time from the GS or from DWR. In the Healdsburg Basin, just to orient you a little bit, you can see Healdsburg with Lake Sonoma there. This is a filter of, I believe this one is nitrate as well. And as we move on, why am I showing you this? Well, it's to reiterate the point that we have high quality water. If we go back, now these are simple averages. So you kind of, when you take data and do certain analysis with it, you gain clarity and you lose clarity. But for the purposes of this, it does a nice job of illustrating that we do have high quality groundwater, especially in comparison to the effluent or what will really be the concentrations of nitrate as they are recycled or distributed through irrigation systems out in that basin. Additionally, when you take a look at the total dissolved solids, we see even maybe a little bit more concern for as salts have a tendency to accumulate. It is possible that they can wash through an open basin, but in closed basins and circumstances, they have a tendency to accumulate over time. So that just goes right back to the point of encouraging groundwater monitoring and data collection in those permits as we enroll people. Moving on to Ukiah, you have a little screenshot of both the nitrate and the total dissolved solid concentrations. Again, a little bit different. It's almost the same, but a little different story in that you actually see a little bit less treatment coming out of the Ukiah plant. And so we do have a much higher concentration of effluent or water that is potentially going to be recycled. Ukiah is going to be going through a very significant upgrade as they recently got a pretty large grant from the State Water Board, and they were going to be expanding their water recycling use throughout the basin for both irrigation and water conservation measures purposes. And so just pointing out what we're trying to look at here again is the trends over time and in the land disposal wells in the area that you see in comparison to what we're finding average concentrations to be throughout the basin. It's not very alarming, but again, it's, you know, nice to know that we are quantifying high quality waters. Here we have our salts. I talked a little bit before about salts generally not generally accumulating over time, but and it makes sense that there's potential for these to flush out in the Ukiah Basin particularly. I asterisk this particular one because this is actually a very limited data set. I think it's only two data points for the 70s, so we're not really confident in that number. And wanted to illustrate that point, particularly not for a lack of confidence, but for, again, to echo the need for more data in there so it can further inform us. As you may be, or as you are aware, and we had a presentation a few years back from Sonoma County Water Agency and the USGS, they've done some fantastic work out here in further characterizing this groundwater basin. Here we are at Santa Rosa. An important feature to remind us of this basin here is we are separated by the Trenton Ridge Fault, which really physically separates the north from the south, the Windsor Basin from the Cotati Basin. And there's an important distinction to make from that as time goes on. This is the great thing that the GS did. They actually had depth-dependent data, meaning they separated out monitoring wells from shallow, 150 feet and above, to deep, 150 and below. And that popped out kind of an interesting trend for us as we see our shallow first encountered water-bearing zones do appear to be basin-wide accumulating salts over time. The last bar that you see there in 2012 is from the State Board's GAMMA data. And GAMMA has been advancing and improving over the years, but one of the things that we and other regions have been asking the State Board for, and we hear they're working on it, is a depth-dependent module, because you can clearly see that you get a much different impression of the data when you're looking at the deep zone here versus the shallow zone, and it kind of gets you right back to that importance of groundwater recharge that I was talking about before. And here we have a look at the nitrate concentrations. We're well below the maximum contaminant level, and that doesn't necessarily give us, we're not entirely too alarmed by this data. It has an interesting shape that I'll talk about a little bit more. On this one, it's key to note that the deeper data is just continuing to accumulate. So, got Matt there. Right in the back of the 2010 data, again, we're really wondering, Matt even said, well, boy, I really want to see what that 2010 data looks like. Are we still increasing in our deep zone? So the GS's work has been fabulous of giving us these good examples. And I want to tie a little bit about this. We've made some interesting observations about this data. Here you see Santa Rosa Plain groundwater elevations, and this is in the 90s. This is when Rohnert Park was at the peak of their pumping before they had water supply from Sonoma County Water Agency. And what you see here, this map is showing, is actually these contour lines are showing that we have a depression. We've created a divot, big hole down there from all that pumping. Once they got on Water Agency water, the water rebounded, it recharged, and we now have a more typical flow path towards the Laguna de Santa Rosa. So let's look at what that looks like, that total annual pumping over time. When we see that it actually peaks in the 90s and then drops off when that water comes on, we couldn't help but notice there's a little bit of similarity there with those nitrate concentrations. So we spoke to Santa Rosa and folks about that, and it was just something that we're noting. And again, kind of going back to that importance of groundwater recharge in our deeper zones here as time moves on, it's much more difficult to remediate And we are really fortunate in this region to be on ahead of the curve and learning from other areas of the state like the Central Valley and the Central Coast, and we have the opportunity to apply that ounce of prevention as opposed to that pound of cure and the costly desal or nitrate removal that, you know, you're in the order of millions, if not billions, of dollars for statewide remediation of some of these contaminated areas. And finally, is the unfortunate case of Valley Ford. I mentioned that water supply well was knocked out of the commission. Here you do see we have an area. Valley Ford's really a bowl that is surrounded by dairies, and in the middle of that are on-site septic systems. So there's really only two sources out there for that potential.
Jeremiah, just quickly looking at that picture, was that the Estero?
Yes, it is.
Estero Americano?
This is the Estero Americano winding its way right
through
here.
Is that, Matt, is that the border of our region?
Yeah.
So is it in our region or is it in the southern region?
Oh, this is in our region.
Yes.
So the Estero is our jurisdiction. Okay, thank you.
Yeah. In fact, as you cross this road right down over here, you enter into this tiny little sliver of Marin County that we have. And again, another look at that nitrate data, and they are actively, I'm not sure the status of those wells at the moment. I know that we did permit the development water, and they're moving on those right now. They did make the unenviable list of the state board's report to the legislature for water supply wells relying on contaminated groundwater. Not to be too alarmed, as far as the region or even Sonoma County is concerned, most of our impairments are natural or due to arsenic. So there's that. And the drinking water source assessment that was developed by Public Health, now our Division of Drinking Water, requirement from the US EPA, they identified a high level of vulnerability to these water systems from the agricultural activities. They didn't mention the on-site systems, as we know, are also out there, but those are really the only two sources that we have. So again, with all that being said, a lot of stuff I threw at you guys this morning. I just like to reiterate these key points, as have you think about them in the context of this conversation and as we move forward, about the abundance of high-quality groundwater and how we move this strategy forward over time. Our next steps include the development of a public participation plan, hopefully by the end of this year, early next year. We're going to get that in the works and hopefully have that out next year. We look to have a groundwater protection strategy, a basin plan amendment, and work plan come to you by the end of next year, perhaps for a workshop, and anticipating that moving for adoption sometime in 2018. In the meantime, continue to build our partnerships, work with others to require groundwater monitoring data, and as well as yourselves, analyze the available data that we do have to characterize our basins and to prioritize our actions. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, board members. Board Member Minton.
Thank you, and thanks for that informative presentation. A couple questions. One, on that Cotati Basin shallow total dissolved solids data being at or above limits in several years, are we worried about that, and is there something to be done there?
Yeah, that's a great question, and I mentioned before, as we were averaging data, you gain some clarity and you lose some clarity. So we're not entirely alarmed at this moment, but it definitely strikes a need as why we need to continue monitoring and even look at some of those sources. There was a little bit of an issue when we were talking with the development or Santa Rosa and company on the development of the salt nutrient management plan, because while the sources and the loads that they estimate are predominantly from the rural areas, vines and ag, when you actually look at the data from, and I didn't put that one up here. When you actually look at the data spatially, there's more of a concentration of salts in the urban areas. So it is something that we're working on. And of course, as any particular isolated concentrations exceed those objectives, our Division of Drinking Water is working quickly to ensure that all uses are protected. But then we do need to look at what is it that we can do and where can we focus our efforts in our waste discharge programs to help prevent, abate, and mitigate those impacts. So I don't want to say that we're entirely alarmed at that data because of those factors, but it's certainly worth noting, and we should really continue to look more into it. And I look forward to seeing what the data looks like for this next decade as we can split the difference in the depth-dependent data.
Thank you. Yeah. And then my second question is, you mentioned as a potential board action in the future these beneficial use designations that sort of clarify hydrologic interactions with regard to groundwater. And I understand that in our water rights system that the state board is having some challenges with incorporating groundwater recharge as a use within water rights for surface water.
Yeah.
And my question is whether these types of basin plan clarifications provide any sort of support to the state board in navigating those challenges, or whether there's anything else that we can do to provide the state board support in navigating those challenges?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I could quote Steve if he likes. or you could come up and speak for your call, Steve. Board member Moore, I apologize. Sorry. You know, Steve had some great comments in addition to the free-for-all is over. He said water rights are really cutting their teeth on this issue right now. And while they're accustomed to working within certain regulatory and legal constraints, here in our own region, we have seen some advances in that with up in the Scott River watershed with some potential recharge projects, as well as working. I myself am kind of working as a liaison, if you will, with our proponents at Jackson Family Wines, who are trying to come up right now with an interesting and innovative groundwater recharge project. And the Division of Water Rights has been open. They've been clear about what their needs are, and we've been communicating that back and forth. And yes, I think as you started, Board Member Mitten, the intention of us clarifying these beneficial uses is to help that process as well as just heighten the awareness of the issue.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Board Member.
Thank you.
What is, you know, as we know, our groundwater basins don't always share the same boundaries as our surface water basins.
Right.
What's our coordination with Region 2? And I don't think we need so much with Region 5 just because we have kind of a ridgetop that divides most of us. But just as in your example down there, we're showing that there may be potentially some boundaries there. Are we, you know, consistent, or are we working on somewhat on the same trajectory?
Yeah, great question. You know, we've been, with the passes of SGMA, we've had a couple of new roundtable developments. And what I mean by that is the collection of representatives from each of the regions that participate in when SGMA first came out, we were talking every 2 weeks as a statewide group led by the Office of Research and Planning. In addition to that, Region 2, 6, and Lahontan, and I think Santa Ana also have been, and the Central Coast, have been coordinating with us as they're kind of anticipating how they're watching us to see how we're going to handle the programmatic approach, the salt nutrient management planning, because they have a similar issue. In some respects, it's actually a little bit different in that they're working from an impairment angle rather than a high quality angle. So I do want to assure the board that we are advancing in our coordination as well with the Department of Water Resources. So not just amongst the regions, but we're identifying these needs to share data and look for examples. And they, like us, have also put together a groundwater team. And it's folks that we're all familiar with and used to talking to. So we've got good relationships and communications with them ongoing. And it's really nice to be able to compare and contrast the urban center and how they're doing it versus the rural center and how that's functioning for us. So
Yeah, no, I'm glad you mentioned Region 3 because I was thinking during the presentation that, you know, we could just be taking pages from their playbook, but you make
Indeed.
A good point that they're working from an impairment perspective rather than a high-quality perspective. Mm-hmm. So that's an excellent point. So I think that we'll learn from each other on that.
Absolutely.
You know, and part of the presentation as well is, you know, you're showing up sort of the nice kind of textbook concepts of gaining and losing. And, you know, we all know that it doesn't always work that way. And you go down on the ground and you sink a well and it does exactly what you don't think it's going to
right.
do. So, you know, as we move forward, you know, I think it's great that we're identifying our beneficial uses. And I think these are the goals that we should be going for and setting them. But just as we move it, please, if we could leave some latitude for regional variation. And so when we, you know, we like to be data driven. And so as long as our regulation allows us to define on the ground what's happening and we can be malleable to that, that's just would be my caution because it just never really works that way. And I don't need to tell you this, but just as we're developing that, it'd be nice to see that so we're not just so rigorously bound in. And, you know, as we kind of look at that global or not global, but higher altitude concept, I think we need to help break down the division between surface water and our unconfined aquifer. This is really the same water body that we're talking about. We get into, you know, deeper aquifers, we can make a distinct separation there. And of course, you know, we're talking differences between, I mean, even the Smith River Plain to the Santa Rosa Plain, we're thinking alluvial settings, but they still are going to behave very differently, let alone when we get into something that's Franciscan, and that's just off the charts. So it's still, you know, they're intimately linked. And so as we are looking at this strictly from a groundwater perspective, I would caution very clear, well, not caution, but just we need to be clear that surface water, particularly in an alluvial area, and you're talking about impacts to riparian zones, they almost live and breathe together.
Yeah. Absolutely. I appreciate the point.
Yeah.
Well taken, Board Member Hales. And I think you know that that's something that we always try to do in our planning efforts here, which is to give points of specificity but acknowledge the need for flexibility.
Sure. And as you know, you move forward with all the different communities that were going to be affected by this and working with your stakeholder outreach. I guess that's maybe probably the best way to, you know, acknowledge that and drive that home and get everybody on board conceptually with how it works. So folks that don't think they have a problem, that they're preserving their high quality waters and they don't need this, well, this is ultimately for their protection.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Jeremiah, first, thank you very much. I'm, as you know, very, very supportive of the development of this policy. I disclose that I have a well at my house in Sebastopol. I'm part of a little watershed group that does some of the groundwater monitoring, elevation monitoring for CASGEM. It's quite interesting to actually look at data, and I appreciate the data-driven process. And to pick up on Jeff's points, I believe that these types of policies start to get to the nexus of regulatory, whether it be groundwater, surface water, or the interaction thereof. I would encourage that, you know, your points are actually spot on. You know, we do have an abundance of high-quality water here. But I would put a subtext to that to say we actually, in Santa Rosa Plain, in my experience, also have an abundance of very shallow water, right? There's a lot of the Santa Rosa Plain that's 10 foot to first encounter water. My well can be artesian at times. There are certain wells in Sebastopol and Sonoma County that act that way. At the same time, in Santa Rosa, you know, these Sigma basins are basically the alluvial plains. And in Sonoma County, there's statistics that are out there roughly that say we have between 40 and 60,000 water wells, domestic water wells, in Sonoma County alone. And by the way, those are spread from everywhere from zone one water abundance areas to zone four, which is water scarce.
Yeah.
And this also needs to extend out. I'm actually heartened to hear that, you know, the Santa Rosa Plain study that was done by USGS is just top notch.
Yes.
It is unbelievably good. And I applaud that work. At the same time, extending those boundaries and looking, because there is a high dependence out here as well in the Franciscan, in these zone threes and fours. And there's also continued pressure out here for supply. Through development, whether it be urban ag or otherwise. I think that also, you know, you're right also to look at the framework of 6816. And I believe that Steve Moore brought this up earlier, that 6816 is a beautiful and elegant one-and-a-half-page document. But at the same time, it depends upon your regional settings and conditions of how you then frame 6816. And I believe we frame that from the standpoint of trying to protect high-quality groundwater. And we're on luckily on very much on that side of the ledger.
Right.
And I think that that is, by the way, a great place to be. I also think that as it goes, you know, looking at the integration of SGMA or this groundwater policy, our regional permits, some of the groundwater work as it pertains to our regional setting, take that out wider and look at what's happening with some of the surface water flow issues. Definitely the gaining and losing stream because of the shallow nature of our groundwater. We truly do have that. I think that there's areas in Sonoma County especially. I think Green Valley Creek's an excellent example, Green Valley Atascadero system.
Yeah.
There's a lot of developed water out there. It's urban, it's ag, it's and I don't want to, you know, necessarily point to one thing, but what we have here in some ways is a tragedy of the commons. There's a common resource here. It's been used really with no real thought about the end of supply, whether that is or out there.
Right.
At the same time, the USGS study was very informative, as is the Scott Valley groundwater study from Mr. Harder, Dr. Harder, UC Davis, you know. And those are the types of data-driven processes that I believe run this. I believe, too, that especially from 6816, that looking at background groundwater quality here is very important, establishing background water conditions, right?
Right.
And I believe that that's a very important part of this. Smith River Plain is an excellent example, as is Santa Rosa. And as far as depth-dependent groundwater quality here, from my knowledge that, say, like this, Sonoma County Water Agency has three deep emergency wells in the Santa Rosa Plain. They're like on the order of 1,000 feet. They're screened to 1,000 feet. Those things pump 3,000 gallons a minute. They're huge. And at the same time, those wells are actually fairly low quality water. They blend that water with the Russian River water and the aqueduct. The last time I looked at it, somewhere around 4,000 to 6,000 acre feet a year come out of those wells. And they blend it actually to the point of having a taste and odor threshold complaint. There was a study that they did that they could blend it up to a certain amount into the higher quality water that they were taking out of Russian River, and they blended it to the point to where they just got up into complaints about taste and odor threshold from customers. And it's quite interesting because there is a natural variability to the water that's here. It's not all the same water, which we totally recognize here. As it goes, too, I would ask you, Jeremiah, salt and nutrient management plan, that was a concept that was 5 years ago that this is a requirement out here, and it actually hasn't happened. Is there a possibility to, instead of having and waiting for, I believe Santa Rosa was the one entity that stood up in our region and said, you know, we're going to start to do this, I believe it was, could we get at that with a programmatic solution and salt and nutrient management planning and relieve the burden from the basin populations and, you know, using GAMMA, using some of these other tools that are here to have more of a programmatic approach that is, for us, again, looking at a 6816 framework of protection, and I think that's where your policy is going and is, can we get at that programmatically and set some minimum standards that then could be potentially augmented or changed in the future if conditions are shown to be different?
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head, Board Member Noren, with that one. And that's the intent of trying to show you what we have available as well as what we know to date about certain areas. And then also asking in turn of the confidence and reliance on expanding such general orders that are out there to require groundwater data so we can say this with confidence, that we can continue to manage in high quality with confidence, or if we are concerned about trends like this one that we see in Santa Rosa Plain, that we have a robust data set accordingly to then manage our program. So yes, and that is why these other regions are looking at us, is how are we going to do this? We at this region did have the vision to reorganize ourselves to enable ourselves to do that a little bit, if you will. And so I think you're absolutely right. So thank you for articulating and recognizing that that is the trajectory that we're currently on with that.
Yeah, and I think that at the same time, you know, looking at going forward here too, you know, using our, again, to me, this is an integration of policy and regulatory process and stakeholder process and basic human expectation out here with landowners like myself that have a water well, that we're going to be moving towards collaboratively towards some type of knowledge-based management of how these systems are going to work. And I do recognize, by the way, that in the state of California, there's a wide variability. In fact, Board Member Giusti's comments earlier are spot on as well, that there are places that were based on emergency out there, that there is no water, right? And the state has been very creative looking at, say, like the Israel model, which Board Member Moore brought up. There are areas in the state that vastly different than our own. I think our footing of using our regulatory process here, whether it be our permittings, our ag land permittings, our permitting for POTW-type work, and permitting towards discharges to land here are very, very important. And I think regional specificity is, for us, is key. Highly supportive of this, really looking forward to actually going through this process and seeing what kind of stakeholder comments we get, how we work through this and go forward. I thank you very much for that.
Thank you.
Very briefly, given the complexity of this issue, obviously this is a very long-term program.
Yeah.
I wanted to build a little bit on Board Member Hale's comments that we need to get that balance of being able to act with significant data gaps and at the same time be able to adjust for site-specific or changes. So it may fit into adaptive management as a way that we can proceed with the data gap and then fill it in. But we need some kind of flexibility because everyone who gets involved in groundwater finds out it's never quite the same. I wanted to thank you for getting us right from the start in the GAMA system so that we have a consistent database statewide, especially given all the different trends we have and all the people looking at groundwater. Critical positive decision, both of us and the state board and everyone to commit to a common data source. Otherwise, we'd spend 20 years reconciling them. I appreciate your adaptability that if a particular state program scope is less here than is desirable, that you're trying to find an alternative that would accomplish the same purpose.
Yes.
I did want to say the spirit of the Porter Cologne Act is really prevention, 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 and that one ounce of prevention is worth 10 pounds of restoration. So I think our trying to preserve a lot of these aquifers from developing problems is sound. I did want to say and I know you're aware of this and you're doing a good job, we don't want to get too far ahead of the state board.
No.
Because they're dealing sometimes with very acute problems and they have to have a solution.
Yes.
And so I think we're making the right choice, but we need to do it. And then I do think, you know, from a staffing standpoint, our executive director and people are supporting spending an unfunded, you know, program with you doing it so that we can make the best case to the State Water Resource Control Board. And I thank our executive director for that flexibility, too. That's how a lot of positive things have happened in the North Coast as we get ahead of the budget slightly, obviously not too much because we can't afford it, but that allows us to develop some things that need to happen, and then we can go to the state, and they've, from my perspective, always been pretty reasonable. Lastly, I want to thank you for that you're going to go attend Sigma, in that you've added the extreme north coast of the Eel River to your repertoire. I did want to say I'm actually on that group, and
wonderful.
I was shocked at a lot of times you walk in the room, and I'm from water quality, I'm a government regulator, and you sort of go, but they were actually very enthusiastic and supportive of water quality attending,
yeah.
And they felt we were positive contributors. So I want to tell you, you don't have to wear your flak jacket.
Oh,
that
good.
You're
huh.
Walking into a room that should receive you pretty warmly.
Nice, thanks. Good to know.
Board Member McGann. Board Member Goosey.
Well,
okay,
you.
We're going to take a. Okay. I was trying to get a 10-minute break, but we only have one. Okay, thank you. Brendan Edelman.
Thank you for your time.
Yeah, thank you for your thorough presentation.
Brenda Edelman, I just have brief comments. First of all, excellent report, and I'm very, very pleased that you're embarking on this huge endeavor. I have one question. I'm just wondering if any of these studies look at toxins at all. I didn't hear anything mentioned about that, and it would be nice if at least some basic or the most highest concern constituents be at least attempted to look at in along doing this process. But the other thing I want to mention is that for many years, as most of you know, I was tracking Santa Rosa wastewater issues, and I was very much involved in the salt and water management program, and I supplied extensive comments. I went to their meetings. I was very disappointed that no one ever responded to my comments, and when I asked about it, they said, oh, well, it's going to go to the regional board, and they're going to have meetings on it, and there's going to be an opportunity for giving input to the regional board, and it never happened. All of a sudden, I'm hearing, well, it was just accepted. It was quite a few years ago, and what I vaguely recall is that I had a lot of concern about all the shallow wells and the safety of irrigation with wastewater in areas where the waters are very shallow. So at any rate, I just wanted to mention that. I don't know the story of how this got approved or if I was misled and given the wrong information about public input, but there was never really any, other than allowing us to participate in the meetings, there was no real public process connected with that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Don, would you like us to respond to the two issues?
Very briefly, though, because I'm...
Yes, very
been
briefly.
Trying for a break since
okay.
about 10.
I'll get you there. 30 seconds. 3 points in 30 seconds. The State Board is going to be entertaining and will be advancing on a revision to the recycled water policy. And as a part of that, too, the State Board has now heading up the collection of all of the efforts that have been done throughout the state on their Constituent of Emerging Concern initiative. So they're developing a work plan. It's headed up by Greg Gearhart at the Office of Information Management and Assessment. There's a overwhelming amount of information on the subject, and so the state is now collectively putting our heads together, and I like the process in which they're working on that. With regional specificity, a few years ago, as we reported out on our chemicals of emerging concern, Santa Rosa Plain, Sonoma County Water Agency had done both a surface water and groundwater assessment. We did not find there was one minor detection in groundwater of any kind of emerging concern compound, and I think it was related to a flame retardant, which we see coming off of some of our clothes as we wash them sometimes. So interesting little data point there that was barely detectable, even below the mean detection limit, so the confidence wasn't very high. Otherwise, there was actually no detections in that. And so as far as those toxic substances are concerned, they are something that we are not ignoring, but we're very cautious and prudent how we move forward on such a complex issue.
Thank you.
And very briefly on the salt and nutrient management. Where we're at in the process is that there's a monitoring plan that's been developed. We've approved that monitoring plan, but we haven't done official action of approving the whole salt and nutrient monitoring plan, just the monitoring component of it.
Thank you.
Okay. We are taking a 10-minute break. I'm going to try and look at the agenda and see where we are and get maximum planning for the rest of the day.